This is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We were at the Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We were literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Scene. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Venus retrograde is an astrological transit happening from May 13th to June 25th of this year. Transits are the way the planets are moving right now, and when we pay close enough attention, I believe we can feel the effects of them on our lives. To introduce us to the themes and the feelings of this particular transit, I'm going to share the mythology of Venus retrograde as told by Chani Nicholas. And I quote, "Venus was known as Inanna by the Sumerians. Her famous underworld journey is a tale of reckoning, awakening, and integrating the powerful material of the unconscious into consciousness. Called one day by her sister, Ereshkigal, goddess of the underworld, Inanna descends to her realm. Ereshkigal is the opposite to Inanna's beauty, glory, and adoration. She is the sister betrayed, feared, unloved, alone, rejected. Her pain has distorted her. Her hunger for love left unjustly unfulfilled. Ereshkigal is the aspect of Inanna, the aspect of us all, that lives just under the surface, waiting for our consciousness to open its call. When she reaches her sister in the underworld, Inanna is met with a death stare that annihilates her. Her corpse is then left where no one can reach her. The only beings that come to her aid are two magical helpers who appease Ereshkigal by witnessing her pain, acknowledging it, and mirroring her struggle back to her. These beings echo Ereshkigal's cries and wails. For the first time, Ereshkigal is relieved of her pain because she is related to, accepted, given some compassion for her struggle. In return for this kindness, she gifts them Inanna's body, and the goddess is reborn. Ascending to the great above, Inanna is renewed, but is never the same. Now, fully awakened by coming into contact with the pain of her other half, Inanna is, for the first time, a queen truly worthy of her crown."
I love it. Actually, when I did my year in review, I read about that and I was like, this is coming. So I'm excited. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you feel when you heard that story?
I mean, when I first read it months ago, I thought, that's nice. And then in thinking more about just how I'm feeling and where I'm at in terms of just personal journey, personal healing, it is very on the nose. And I mentioned to you yesterday or the day before that I'm just upset at how much sometimes astrology feels like it's reading me, because I'm like, oh, like so many things that I feel as though I have been suppressing are not really like bubbling up in a type of way. Because I always thought of Venus. This is a story about Venus, right? Like that. Okay.
Yes. I always thought Inanna's Venus. Yeah.
I always thought the story were just like the idea of Venus was about like sensuality and like feeling and like love and all of those kinds of things. It seemed really like in tune with like almost not really body, but that's just my own understanding. And so much of what you just said and what I had learned about the sort of mythology and the story of Venus is more about like cutting down to like the core, like the basics, like understanding like the root of the things that oftentimes I, for myself, don't acknowledge, but they're always like percolating low key. And so anyways, yeah, this just feels like a really good time to talk about this and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. And there's two things that I would say there. One is that Venus, our idea of Venus and the things that that goddess represents, has been really sort of sanitized and flattened because of, I think, living in a patriarchal culture where, you know, women and femininity have been sort of defanged. The culture wants representations of women and femininity that are very passive and safe and, you know, rule bound. Whereas from what I have read, the original sort of idea of Venus was a lot more powerful and dynamic and you know, encompassed sort of the full range of humanity and not just like this sort of like
ultra sanitized like beauty.
Yeah. And then I think also the other thing is that retrogrades, and so retrogrades, when we talk about a planet being in retrograde, it means that during that time, from our vantage point here on Earth, a planet appears to be moving backwards in the sky. Of course, it's not actually moving backwards, but that's just like what it looks like from here on Earth. And often that's when it's a time where we're going to be slowing down. We're going to be going back and finding things that we missed, uncover things that are buried deep. And the sort of shadow side of the what the planet represents is going to be more present. So with something like Venus, it's like, yeah, Venus represents love, but then what about all of the parts of love that are less comfortable for us, you know, like the rage that can happen, the pain, the jealousy, you know, the times where we don't feel loved. So I think those are a lot of the themes that we're going to be experiencing in this Venus retrograde. And I would just say, first of all, that I'm not an expert in astrology. I'm a baby astrologer. So anything I say, you know, take it as a jumping off point and explore more. I mean, that's true even with experts. Experts are just people still. But, you know, in particular with me, just like, you know, take what works as a jumping off point.
I think that's a great, I'm going to say like a disclaimer, but I also want to say that you are, without a doubt, you've been my introduction to astrology and my source of just fact-finding and understanding. So as much as I know that you don't want to like pump your own tires, I'm like, you know so much. You know so much more than a lot of people do. And as a true baby astrologer, like a baby, like a zygote astrologer, I feel like you're more like you're in your like early 20s astrologer, you know, like that's what you are in the trajectory of timelines. And so yeah, I'm so excited to talk about this, if only because, like I always say selfishly, it's about being able to talk through some things, which is going to be uncomfortable because the topic of the conversation is about uncovering or unearthing some of those like ugly things or the unacceptable stuff. And so it seems like almost counterintuitive to do that, but like we like to learn in public, so
totally.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So I thought we would just maybe kind of look at the ways that Venus retrograde might be affecting the two of us based on our charts. And that can kind of be, yeah, again, a jumping off point for folks who might be looking at Venus retrograde in their chart as well. So to go back to the mythology of it, again, it's like there's these parts of us that are in pain, that are maybe have felt unacceptable, maybe they felt rejected. And these are parts that I think we need to make contact with during this time. And something that I think a lot of us struggle with is, can we actually accept parts that are ugly instead of trying to make everything beautiful, you know? Like, can we actually accept parts that are just like hurting and they're not fitting the rules and in this like sort of neat little like contained package that we can sanitize and show to people? Can we actually just like accept the parts that aren't there yet?
Right. And the parts that are all like hanging out that we would rather, as you're talking about this, it is making me already feel, or it's just arising this feeling of, oh my God, like there's been so much of my own life so far where I've been really concerned with what the outside looks like as opposed to really working on like how I'm doing on the inside. So
yeah. And so then because it's Venus retrograde, a lot of the themes are going to be around relationships, intimacy, and then all things Venus. So that can be femininity, women, money, desire. And this year Venus retrograde is happening in the sign of Gemini, so there's going to be probably themes of communication as well. And then so Venus retrograde happens regularly, and every 8 years it happens in the same part of your chart. So 8 years ago in 2012, and then 8 years before that in 2004, Venus was also retrograding in Gemini. So then that will touch the same parts of your chart. So yeah, let's jump in. So for you, that's your eighth house. And eighth house has a lot of themes around things like shared resources, any kind of energy exchange. So that can be money, you know, being exchanged between people. It can be sex. Eighth house rules death as well, grief. So a lot of like heavy, big topics.
And a lot of topics are also ones that we don't, I mean, I would like to say that I'm sex positive, but so much of what I'm learning at those topics that are in the eighth house are things that, like, I don't really talk about publicly, or, like, they're things that we actually just don't, as a culture, explore very often. Or we're just beginning to see folks exploring these topics really publicly and reclaiming them in ways that are, I don't know, subversive. But as a person who very much grew up in the church, like, all of those, you know, grief, death, loss, money, sex, I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't even want to deal with it. Like,
yeah. So I sent you some notes yesterday just around ways that this might be showing up for you, and sort of like, okay, you can just be thinking, is this showing up in your life now? Did it show up in your life? Did it relate back to anything that happened in 2012, 2004? What did you think? What did you come up with?
Okay. Well, where to start?
I was worried. I was like worried that you weren't going to relate to anything. You'd be like, I don't know, nothing. And then as soon as I sent it to you, you're like, oh God.
Yeah. I think my response was, oh, much. I hate this. Yeah. I was like, I don't like reading this shit, but no, I really did. I do appreciate that you took the time to send that to me. I guess to start, it would probably be the biggest lesson that I'm learning about is about finances right now. So I'm in the midst of potentially moving roles, potentially moving organizations. And during this coronavirus pandemic, we've been talking about how it's affected everybody, but in different ways. And one of the things that I've come to realize is the ways in which I've worked hard to create a life for myself. And so much of that working hard had been on this basis of, I don't have enough. I need to keep on like building and building, and I need more, and I don't have enough. And it's kind of that scarcity mindset, I guess. And in reality, you know, this time has been me realizing how comfortable I actually am, and how, like, I knew I had privilege, but, like, having financial privilege, being able to save money, being able to then discern and say, like, I actually have more than enough. So that's been uncomfortable, I think, because there this new work that I'm excited about that I really want to come to fruition in another organization would be a pay cut. Like, it would affect me financially. And I've had to, like, over the past literally 3 days, like 4 days, I've had to sit with myself and be like, what's this? Like, what am I moving organizations for? Is it because of money, or is it because of work that aligns with my purpose and values and interests and a field that I want to work in? And I've had to really wrestle against feeling like I'm not letting myself down, but I'm forsaking some of the work, the groundwork that I had laid in potentially taking an opportunity that will mean less money. And that feels like, first of all, it feels like first world problems. Like, some people are like really truly struggling right now, and that there's a whole like level of self-policing and feeling like I don't have the capacity or the ability to feel the way that I feel about things, even though it's like, well, this is my experience and I gotta live it. I gotta embody it. Like, if this is what my life is right now, then it is what it is. So yeah, it's like the financial stuff has been weird. And I think a lot of that is because of upbringing, feeling like a lot of my upbringing was being worried about whether I would have enough, feeling like insecure in terms of where our family was heading, feeling like watching my mom work so hard and secure the bag and so much to the point where I'm like, well, I can't be moving backwards. I can't be going from like making X amount of money to making like that, like less money. Cause like, how will that look? Like, what will that mean? And it's like, I have to realize, like, look to who? Like, how will that look to who? It's just me. There's nobody else that I really need to be. I mean, me and my partner make decisions together about our finances, you know, but that's been a big one, because I've never really identified as a person that's like, money rules the world, or like, money is an influence in my life. And I'm realizing, like, no, like, a lot of the things that you've been doing, or a lot of what you are making decisions based on is based off of money. And it's kind of embarrassing. Like, it's kind of ugly. It feels like I'm part of like the capitalist machine, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, but we live in capitalism, so.
Oh, don't we hate that bad bitch?
Like, yeah, it's like you can't really escape it. Money does determine the kind of life you can live to some degree, to a large degree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of questions there around, like, what are you investing your energy into? What are other people investing into you in terms of, you know, what are they going to be paying you? I'm also wondering if, like, the joint resources with your partner is, like, part of the theme.
I think that piece has been pleasant and a sight of new awakening in a positive way, just realizing that when I'm saying, like, I have enough, I mean, like, we have enough. Like, as a partnership, we have enough. And feeling really supported by my partner, by Nolan, to make decisions in terms of work that are solely based off of what do I want? Where do I want to go? Well, like, not just based off of money. He's like, we have enough money. Like, that I don't want you to make decisions solely based off of, like, well, is our lifestyle going to be changing? He's like, our lifestyle's fine. Like, we don't need necessarily more. So there was a moment, like, I think last month, where there was some precarity around his job and his work this year. And there was a part of me, I caught myself in the middle of this, like, moment where there was a part of me that was starting to be like, oh my God, he's going to have to go on, like, this government thing. And what's that going to mean for us? Like, it brought me back to a place when I was, like, 12 years old, I swear. Like, where I was kind of panicked and feeling like we're going to be trapped and there's going to be some repercussions. Like, we're going to be suffering financially because of this. And I had to realize that I'm not 12 and that this is not about my, you know, this isn't my family situation when I was 12 years old. This isn't about my dad. This is about me and Nolan. And he is a really different person than my dad was, you know? And I had to realize what was going on in that moment. I was very much like freaking out about it. The fact that he would need to go on some sort of, like, government something. And I told him that I was like, I think I had this feeling of, this reminds me of something. This reminds me of how I felt way back when. And, like, it better not be like that. And I was like, that's not even, these are really different circumstances. It's triggering. It was triggering, to be honest. But feeling supported in that way has been super important right now.
Well, I wonder if that's part of, you know, what's happening is you're connecting back to that little girl who felt very afraid and, like, 100%. Didn't feel taken care of. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's part of it too. It's like feeling like you want to make sure that I want to make sure that I'm taken care of, because I didn't feel like I had the ability to make those decisions at 12. Like, I didn't have a job. I didn't have resources. So now that I do have some resources, I'm like, I got to hold onto them so tightly. Even if they don't serve me, even if I'm at a job where I literally don't love it. Like, and I'm not saying don't love it, because not everyone has the ability, or not everyone even gets to the point in their life where they ever love their job. But working at a job where it seems almost counter to your values, seems counter to the way that you want to spend your hours on this planet. And so the dark side of things is like is greed. Like, that's what I've been noticing in myself, is like, ooh, am I like, and it's weird too, because it's also disguised in, as women of color, we're always talking about our worth and not wanting to be underpaid and not wanting to step into organizations where we're like, people are taking advantage of us. We know we make less money than our white counterparts. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's conveniently shrouded in that too, where I'm like, no, I deserve more. And it's like, yeah, maybe I do. But also, what part of that I deserve more is the foundation of that conversation that I'm having with myself is founded on, like, scarcity and greed and not realizing that I actually have more than enough right now, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that's so huge. Also realizing, like you're saying, how deserving can become greed, but also how greed connects back to fear and the scarcity mindset.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
When you're talking about when you were 12, was that 2004?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Because that was like
one. Oh my God. Whoa. Okay.
See, astrology is real.
Astrology, like, I'm not even going to fight with anybody about this. Astrology is real. Actually, fight me. Astrology is real. Fight me.
Yeah, did you, so it seems like there was a Venus retrograde in Gemini in 2004 where a lot of these themes were coming up, apparently. And then did you, were you able to connect with anything that happened in 2012? I don't know if you remember.
2012, that would be a time around my, I don't remember. I was drinking way too much around that time, so couldn't tell you. But definitely 2004 was like, I'm feeling, and reflecting on that now, it's like there are very much like a pattern of themes and feelings and emotions that are resurfacing right now.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
That's so funny. Astrology. Yeah.
I know. How about you? Are we going to talk about you or are we going to talk about me some more?
Yes. Well, we can talk, we can bring mine in and then, yeah, we can talk about both because mine is so funny. So mine, Gemini, it's my fourth house. So that's home, family, foundation. So I'm looking back thinking, okay, themes for me, it's going to be around the dynamics in my home life, how they're making me feel, you know, anything from home and foundation and family where that's made me feel unloved or ugly or, you know, the where there's pain and grief and all of these, you know, shadow sides of Venus. Mm. Well, it's so funny because my home environment has changed in big ways every Venus retrograde in Gemini, apparently.
Really?
So as I, well, so as I've mentioned this year, like I've lived with my current roommate for many years, and then just with this whole coronavirus thing, I ended up coming, bailing on that and coming to stay with my sister. So I've been with my sister for a while, and this is the first time that I've ever come and lived with this sister. So my entire home life has changed. I like became very obvious how much my home environment was not working for me. I changed it up. I came to live with my sister. And living here has been amazing and healing, and also has brought up for me a lot of pain around both, you know, how my current living situation was not working for me, and as well just around what comes up for me when I'm in close contact with people that I love every day, because I'm not used to this. And it does bring up a lot of like wounds from childhood, a lot of like shame and sort of like fear of making any kind of impact in my home environment, you know, trying to sort of like not impose on anything on anybody, not like making, you know what
you
I mean?
Like tiptoe.
Yes.
Yes. I know.
Exactly. So that's this year. And then, yeah, my living situation is going to be changing again, also during Venus retrograde, into a situation that, again, there's like a lot of healing to be done. And but it's for a powerful, amazing relationship. So it's going to be another really positive change in my living situation, but very Venus retrograde. And then, hilariously, so 8 years ago at this exact time when Venus was retrograde in Gemini, last time, that's when I moved in with my current roommate.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really, we are circling this.
Like, yeah. Like, we literally lived together for 8 years, like these exact 8 years in between this cycle. And at that time, it was actually really good when I moved in with her, because the living situation before, I was living with a friend who was in a very violent relationship, and it was a scary situation. And so getting out of that and then moving in with my current roommate at the time was a big thing.
In like a positive way for you.
In a positive way. Yeah. At that time. Yeah. So that was the last Venus retrograde. And then the one before that. So my mom, who hadn't dated since she divorced my dad when I was in kindergarten, had started dating the person who became my stepdad, and they had like just started dating, and then he got diagnosed with cancer. And so she decided to move in with him to take care of him. They'd only been dating a couple of months.
Whoa.
And it was just so intense for me. I was like, this is so much. And I bailed and went and lived with my other sister for a couple months. So, and let me just say, like, those, this time where I'm living with my sister right now and that time where I lived with my other sister for a couple months, those are the only times in my life that I've gone and lived with my sisters. Yeah. It's not like this is like a thing I do all the time.
right.
Well, like, since they had moved out and I went to their houses and lived with them.
Yeah.
So this is not a thing that happens all the time. This is apparently only a thing that happens during Venus retrograde in Gemini. Yeah. So, yeah, it's so funny because I'm not someone who changes living situations a lot, but every time Venus is retrograde in Gemini, apparently my home life changes drastically.
So I have questions about what you're learning about living with your sister right now, and how, I know that we talked about it in the past, like how it's affected you like emotionally, and how you feel just not being in isolation when you're living in your house is such a huge, like, huge deal, especially given, like, what we're going through. How much what have you learned about your own personal needs? Or, like, what do you think you needed before that you might need, have different needs now? Or has anything changed around what you're going to be doing going forward?
Yeah, I think it's making me realize, like, the level of intimacy that I do want. Mm-hmm. Like, I've gotten very used to having so much space and alone time, and I value that. I'm very introverted and I value that, but it's making me realize that actually I can adapt to being a lot more with people, and that I want that. And it's making me realize too that I want to kind of work through all of this shame that comes up for me when I'm in such close contact, because it's like this feeling of, you know, I'm just bothering everyone and everyone hates me and, like, wants me to go away, you know? And, like, that's not
it's how not everyone, like, feels. It's not real. It's not necessarily real. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's just also a lot of pain that I realize I need to heal now. Like, being around, you know, my sister and brother-in-law who are so caring, like, for me, and also their relationship with each other is so loving and caring. And I have experienced a lot of abuse in relationships, like that happened to me a lot early on, which I think made it really difficult for me to then be in relationships moving forward. And one of the big things for me was that, you know, in very early relationships, receiving care and violence became very
intertwined,
like, paired,
right?
And so now I get a lot of, like, fear and anxiety when I'm given care, because my system is sort of, like, expecting violence to come along with that.
Right.
So that's something that I know I need to heal that. And even seeing, you know, my 4-month-old, 5-month-old almost now.
Oh my God. She's probably so big now from, like, the pictures that you showed me in December.
Oh yeah.
You need to be sending me more. You need to be sending me more videos.
You're right. I do. Yeah. Ma'am. I don't know why I'm withholding the cutest, sweetest baby.
Very
in the
rude.
World.
Very
I'm so
rude.
Sorry. yeah. She's getting so big, and she's so chatty and, like, cute, and
I love it.
Yeah, she's the best. But yeah, again, it brings up a lot for me, because, you know, I have parents who really love me, but, you know, despite their best intentions, my mom was very severely depressed when I was little, and, you know, my dad certainly wasn't able to be the kind of father that my brother-in-law is. So there was a lot of needs that weren't met for me, and so there's a lot of grief there, and just, like, a lot of, I don't know, a lot of healing that needs to be done. Again, it's like these parts of me that don't feel deserving of care, or that feel unloved or ugly, and, like, all of these Venus retrograde themes, like, that's really true for me at the like home and family level, even though, again, like, I know that I was loved and am loved. But I think that's something that is such a huge blessing for me, that this is work that I can do, because I do have people around me who not only love me, but can love me in the ways that I need to be loved, like, can show me that love in the ways that I need to be loved. And so these parts of me inside that, like, have a hard time receiving that, you know, they're being given a lot in terms of, like, having a good chance at healing, or a good environment for healing.
Mm, that's dope. I'm so happy for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also, as you're talking about parts of you that feel unworthy of care, or having a negative association when you receive care because of your experience with violence, I think about how, this is one of the themes that you had sent me, is, like, thinking about your, like, collaborations with others and your relationships with other people. And for myself, I've noticed I am so not good at continuing to maintain relationships that in my mind, I think of like work or collaboration for like a project output. I'm flaky as fuck. Like, I realize how flaky I am, and I've had to think to myself, what are ways that I am stifling my own ability to like foster and nourish relationships in my life that I do value? Because it's like, it's not even like I'm doing that to people that I don't like. It's like people that I'm like, I admire you. I want to work with you. I want to do things with you. I want to collaborate with you. And then I think for me, in the same way that you're talking about parts of yourself that you're like, they're unloving or unlovely or things that you want to shy away from sharing with others, I've realized that my tendency is to go to, if I'm not producing and doing and have it all together, then it's not worthy of even speaking about to people, to the point where people that I've tapped and been like, hey, I want to do this thing with you, I'll just like, I'm a ghost. I'm ghosting. And I'm not even intentionally ghosting. I'm just like, oh, it's not ready. I can't talk to them about it yet. And I'm like, why am I treating relationships like business interactions? Mm. What does that say about me as a person? Like, and I don't really know. I think there's a large part of me that's like, if I'm going to spend time doing something with somebody, I want to make sure that I give it the time and the energy it needs. So if I can't give it the time and the energy that it needs, I'm just going to park it there. I'm not communicating my process. And the truth of the matter is that like my process, I'm making it up as I go. It's not like I'm being strategic in it. Like, I'm just learning how in so many ways, the things that I actually want, I'm getting in my own way of. Like, I want community. I want to like do creative projects with people. I want things that I'm working on, like this podcast, to like be successful. But then there's a part of me that's still like, and I don't know how to, I don't even know how to put words into what I'm feeling, but I know that it comes from a place of feeling like, well, if I don't have anything perfect, it's not even worth talking about. So I should just like, I should just keep it to myself. I should just not, it basically it's me being like, I still I'm learning how to play well with others and how to work with others. And when I'm talking to others, I'm talking with people that I actually like love, like on projects that I actually want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm finding it so hard to allow all the messiness of the process of creating something collaboratively with another person. I am trying to sanitize that and keep it together when maybe it's not going to evolve as like this perfect thing. Maybe one day it might be great, but right now it's messy and I just don't know how to wade through messiness. I've been avoiding messiness for my whole life, it feels like.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've started to identify this thing, like you're starting to notice, and you're not necessarily really sure yet fully like why that is, what's going on with that, how it could be different. It's like you're starting to see the sort of the broad outlines of it, and maybe this next, you know, Venus retrograde is 40 days. It's like a time maybe that you can go deep, that you can be like journaling, going to therapy, really like digging in and saying like, okay, what is this about? Where is like the Ereshkigal archetype in me? And like, where can I connect with my own pain and how might that help me move towards something that feels more in line with my values?
Yeah, like what I actually want, not like what I'm... Because I talk about this a lot with Nolan, the difference between focusing on what you want versus focusing on what you don't want, and like what that energy does to just like yourself. Like, if I'm always just like, I don't want to fail about this thing, it's like, even if I succeed, I'll be like, well, like, I didn't fail, I guess, as opposed to being like, I want to succeed. Yeah. The things that I'm going to do, they're always going to be framed in like a more successful mindset, if that makes, you know what I'm saying? So I think you're totally right. Thank God it's 40 days is retrograde. I was going to say fuck 40 days, but I'm also like, it is great to have that space to, like you said, identify the outline of the thing. I need to work through it.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So it's time to really dig in. And I think this is a good time for me to bring up our BIPOC of the week, because she wrote something that really feels Like, I started tearing up reading this last night because it just felt so perfect for the kind of work that we're going to be doing during Venus retrograde. So Asali Earthwork, I don't know if you've heard of her. She's a Black queer femme. She's a community healer, earthworker, and tarot reader. And she was very instrumental in getting me into tarot because of a series she did, Tarot of the Cutie Pock, where she reviewed like a lot of decks that feature images of people of color and queer and trans people. Because I honestly don't think I ever would have gotten into tarot without her, because it just felt so unbearably white until I stumbled on her blog and found out that there were so many other decks out there and so many other types of people out there who are doing that work or using that tool. And I think tarot can be such a powerful tool for self-discovery because the symbolism of it, it's so effective in helping us to tune into our intuition. And so especially at a time like Venus retrograde, when there's all these painful things coming up and we're working with our shadows, tarot can be helpful in showing you the thing that you don't want to see, but on some level you know it's there. And on some level you like know you need to give it its attention, your attention. So
I hate it, but yes. Continue.
Yeah. So Asali shared this piece of writing on her blog called Navigating My Shadow. And I want to read it because it's just so perfect for this healing work that we're diving into. So in it, she references the Slow Hauler tarot deck, and specifically the Emperor card, which in that deck is reimagined as a navigator. You don't have to understand the cards to experience this. I just wanted to preface it with that so it's not confusing when those words come up.
Okay.
So she says, and I quote, "Trauma is the gift that keeps on giving, I tell you.
I hate this already."
Recovering through it can look like this. You make a choice in order to survive. To keep going, you separate yourself from the part of you with the daggers caught in between your ribs, and you do your best to bury that past pain. You are trying to survive. Except now, you arm yourself against that pain. Except now, you realize that one of the easiest ways to do that is to employ the same tools used against you. So now you carry daggers, more than were used against you. You won't be harmed again. And they are pointed every which way, and at least one of those ways is at yourself. You look so much like what harmed you that it shouldn't be a surprise when you hurt yourself, but it is. You are still trying to survive. Which is such an emperor approach to trauma, I had to give myself a wry smile when I realized it. Make a plan of survival. Stick to it within the rules the hurt set, because pain makes you forget that you can create a vision for your healing that isn't bound by where your trauma came from, but where your love wants you to go. Which is why I love the Slow Hauler's version of the Emperor so much. Where your love wants you to go, affirms the navigator. The ocean, my love, is boundless, and so is the sky above it, a union of heart and mind. Which isn't to say it won't be treacherous. Lemaire can be a cruel mistress. The ocean is also Yamaya, and all of the mother femme spirits and ancestors who are always ready to hold and rock me. The ocean is also Olokun, reminding me of the boundless abundance treasured within the depths of my shadow, waiting for me to uncover. And within this vast expanse is my direction. The navigator reminds me that I have the tools and the wisdom to find my way back to my true self and face what is hidden, long since dead and haunting. It is one of my own making, drawn from the stars that promise hope and limitlessness, that invites me to dream up a healing not bound by pain, but unbound by love.
Oof. Okay, so damn. Just the part about the daggers being stuck inside your rib, and then you arm yourself with the same thing that had hurt you. Okay, so. Okay. Okay. Yep, okay. I don't know what to say about that. It's really poignant and really beautifully written.
This is imagery that we can hold on to during this time, that we've been hurt and we've hurt ourselves, and you know, love is still here, and we're still being held by our ancestors, and we're being held by people around us or by the universe, or there's other things available to us. There's other things within us that we can connect to. And I think, you know, during this time, it's nice to honor Venus and honor, you know, both the Ereshkigal within ourselves and the Inanna within ourselves. So, you know, taking time, like Friday is, I don't know if you know, the days of the week are associated with different planets. So Friday is Venus's day. So especially on Fridays, if you're able to take time for yourself to do things that feel good in your body, pleasure, expression, beauty, those kinds of things, just take time to like feel good, honor yourself, and all of the support that we can give the Agreshka Girl and ourselves as well, you know, all of the therapy that we can get, all of the crying that we can do, all of the journaling, all of the like empathizing with ourselves. It might be a heavy 40 days, but it can also be a really healing 40 days as well.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.